We are back. It is still Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. This is Futures Power Hour. I'm your host, Chris Vecchio. He's Anton Kulikov. Anton, Tesla earnings got the NASDAQ running higher out of the gate this morning, but we couldn't keep the gains. Bond yields higher across the curve once again, even as oil prices come back in. The dollar is resurgent here. The tone has shifted over the last 2 hours or so. Wouldn't you say, my friend?
Yeah, interesting little reversal here. Can't say I'm surprised, honestly. Usually when we kind of come off the kind of the backs of a sell-off, which we, you know, have in the last couple of days, sometimes it takes market sentiment for to shift a little bit. And, you know, you get some gyration at the bottom, which is, you know, I'd still say we're at the bottom, relatively speaking, and compared to the last couple of weeks. But I don't know. I've been liking the two-sided action, honestly. It's been very refreshing. I mean, you know, for a long-term portfolio, of course, you just like it to go straight up, obviously. But from a trader's perspective, this type of action, I think, begets more opportunity from a trader's perspective, at least for me, especially scalping, kind of, you know, readjusting positions, looking where there's premium and stuff. So personally, I'm not too worried or complaining about the market, even though, you know, we did sell off a little bit from the open.
Anton, you're seeing the gains are giving up in the middle of the day. We still have a lot of action ahead of us right now, not just Meta earnings today, of course, but we're going to have the US GDP report tomorrow. There's still more earnings ahead, of course, at the end of this week. So people are feeling a little anxious, perhaps. Tesla provided a nice jolt, but certainly not worth anything hanging on to, at least here for the broader index. Tesla, Apple have not been participants this year. And so do we really see them as bellwethers right now? Well, Tesla's earnings results themselves weren't really good. It was the promise of future production that we may see a mass-produced, low-cost vehicle that drew everyone in. So my attention is turning to the GDP report. We have Meta this afternoon, the GDP tomorrow morning. For me, the GDP report should probably come in good, and it's not going to do anything for people out there, in my opinion, that are hoping that we're going to see some sign that maybe the Fed has a glimmer of hope that maybe they can get that rate cut going in June. And there's lots of maybes in that sentence, Anton, because there's so many contingencies, right? If GDP comes in softer, okay, then what about inflation? Then what about the labor market? Do we need to see 3 good months in a row after what was 3 bad months in a row? Does that get us back to a place where the Fed is comfortable talking about cuts? It's a very difficult hurdle to think that tomorrow's GDP report is going to be some sort of antidote for the market malaise that have come across in recent days, although Monday, Tuesday this week were good. It's been a down month. I think it offers a little bit more risk. If it comes in warm, then we're still where we are. If it comes in hotter, then we have a bigger problem. The odds of it coming in softer, given the distribution of data, seem low. The Atlanta Fed GDP Now growth tracker, 2.7%. Consensus forecasts from Wall Street call for 2.1 to 2.4. So just looking at it through that lens, knowing that the Atlanta Fed GDP has been accurate, I see that there's some upside risk to tomorrow's print. So bonds, a little soft here, stocks feeling a little soft here. It makes sense. High hurdles need to be cleared. And it looks increasingly likely that we're probably not going to clear them.
Yeah. You know, looking at the S&P 500 futures, we have the volatility reading for tomorrow, which is to the GDP reports in the morning, correct? So tomorrow,
8:30 a.m. Eastern, 7:30 Central Time.
So tomorrow's close, getting a reading of 35 points in the S&P 500, 18%. That's not big. It's not a lot for a binary event compared to, you know, like the Fed or even the CPI. We've seen readings higher than that.
Oh, for sure.
So, you know, for the rest of the week, we have about a 51 point expected move. It's not a lot. You know, so I mean, despite all the stuff happening in the markets, I can't help to think that the news really doesn't matter as much as people think it does. You go into next week and you're seeing volatility in the, you know, below 15. And you go later in the month, you're seeing volatility creep up to 16. But still, that's not enough for me to say that that's a huge expectation that's going to increase as we get later into the year. So again, you know, from a technical from a research perspective, you know, it's almost like everything that's piling up in terms of quote unquote bellwethers, I would honestly fade him. Like, I mean, I in other words, I would go long. Because it doesn't seem to me that the market really cares, despite all those things being a risk factor already, and that, and it's known. I don't know. I mean, it's, and here's the thing, you know, Tesla earnings, you know, you look at the Wall Street Journal this morning and it's like a big front page of Tesla, huge miss in earnings, huge miss Tesla earnings. Yet the stock's up 10% today. I mean, so, you know, for somebody talking about sentiment, that's something you can't really ignore. That is the clearest, that is the clearest example of bad news is good news and good news is great news. I mean, I don't know the reports of the earnings, but when there's a headline that says earnings suck and the stock's up 10%, to me, that doesn't really scream that we're in a market environment that people are dumping risk. Even though the S&P sold off a little bit today and the NASDAQ, well, NASDAQ sold off, but still positive. But, you know, so to me, there isn't really much sign for concern as much as there is a place where I would be looking to get a little bit more long, perhaps.
Just curious about your take on Tesla. It's off 5.3% from the high that we set intraday today. Is that not a meaningful turnaround? Sure, it's up 10% still, but like you've given up a third of your gain since 10:08 a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, but it's
up. That's 10. A pullback.
But so is the Dow, and the Dow has nothing to do with Tesla.
I mean, of course not.
I mean, the Dow was, you know, open today at, let's see, it was 38,710. You know, so we're about 100 points lower on the Dow, but that has nothing to do with Tesla. You know, the Russell sold off, that has nothing to do with Tesla. So, I mean, I think it's the market that kind of dragged Tesla down with it, but it's still up 10%. You know, so the singularity risk in Tesla doesn't seem to be there. Because if it was, that's the stock would be lower by, let's say, 10%, and then it would sell off to being down 15% if the rest of the market, you know, took it lower. To me, this is more of the market took Tesla lower intraday, not Tesla itself. Because again, it's still up 10%. I mean, you know, you can't really ignore it. Now, here's something different that, you know, here's the flip side to that. You know, we always want to kind of portray both sides here, or as much as we can. You know, it is still, Tesla is still trading where it was back on April 16th, just a week ago, despite it being down. Oh, sorry, despite it being up 10%, because it's been beaten up significantly this year. So you have two sides of the coin. Was it overcooked? And no matter what the earnings said, there was going to be a pop just because it was so overcooked. Or is this an environment where, you know, bad news still isn't really bad news for the market? I would think it's a mix of both. I don't think anybody could tell you, oh, it's definitely more of a sentiment play or it's definitely a contrarian play. I don't think anybody who makes a claim like that, I think you have to take it with a huge grain of salt, because I don't think anybody could actually know. But regardless, the price action is in, it's up 10%. And I think anybody who's looking at this market has to understand that Tesla's a big component of the NASDAQ. It's a big component of the S&P. And it was a huge move over the last few years. And it's up on a day where theoretically it should be down.
Anton, the Tesla earnings release reaction piqued my interest, not just because I was holding a underwater short put spread, which today certainly helped save the day a little bit. It's not going to be a winner. It's just not going to be as big of a loser.
There you go, Chris.
But I'm interested in the fact that it gave us a positive reaction despite a negative EPS surprise. I talked about this and let me explain. I mentioned this stat a few times this week when I've been on air, but coming into this week, according to FactSet, companies that had positive EPS surprises were seeing a 0% change in their stock prices for the 2 days before and 2 days after the earnings release. Historically speaking, companies usually got a 1% bump in that 4-day window when they had a positive EPS surprise over the past 5 years. On the other hand, companies that were missing their earnings with the negative EPS surprise, they were getting hit to the tune of 6.1%. Historically speaking, over the past 5 years, that 4-day window, 2 days before, 2 days after a negative EPS release had produced an average loss of negative 2.3%. So coming into this week, we are looking at an earnings season so far where winners were not rewarded and losers were punished. And Tesla has a loser of an earnings release. Free cash flow is expected to be positive. It's actually deeply negative. If they were to continue along this run rate for their hemorrhaging money, the business would only be able to stay operational for the next 2.5 years. Right? Earnings miss on the top line and on the bottom line. There's nothing good in there. There's really nothing to like at all. But you get this announcement, and Elon Musk has a really good earnings call, and the stock comes out of the gates today, so it's trading higher. But if we can see that same type of behavior, maybe it's because short interest in the stock was at a 3-year high coming into the earnings report, right? Really difficult to disappoint people because everyone was already short. Right. Everyone was already disappointed in the stock. So how much worse could it get? But if you can go through Meta today, if you can get through Google and Microsoft, and instead of it being good news is not rewarded and bad news is punished, if it is bad news is not punished and good news is handsomely rewarded, that's a very important tell for the state of the market. And that's fundamentally different than what we saw during the state of the decline in April. We're right. starting to get back to a more positive place. Now, I'm still not convinced technically here, Anton, that bulls are out of the woods just yet. Even though that 100% extension at 5,000.25 was hit in the head and shoulders pattern, you look at the rally here so far, and yes, while it was two very nice green days up, we actually haven't really cleared former support turn resistance just yet. And I see the neckline at 5167 and a quarter, coupled with that 2134 EMA envelope looming right above head in that 5150 area. And if that was support all the way up from the October swing lows, then this would be an area where I don't want to see it come up as resistance. So the fact that today we tried to rally close to it and have turned around is a little bit of a, you know, raises my eyebrow a little bit here. I really would only feel comfortable being bullish above 5167. And granted, that's over 200 points from the low that we had last week. But it's because of the technical pattern that the downtrend intra-month still remains that I feel like this is still, you know, if you're trading this long, you've got to be very small. You've got to be very cautious. This isn't the, as I've said a lot this week, this isn't the reverse mortgage your home and get in levered long, right? Sell naked puts, get long out of the money calls because this thing is going up and there's no way you can stop it. It's not that kind of conviction trade, which that's very, you know, tongue in cheek. I hope no one actually does that when they're feeling high conviction in a trade.
Yeah, but that's a never trade.
Please don't ever do that. We're not giving financial advice, but please don't ever do that. But the point is, like, it's not, this isn't the technical setup. It's not the sentiment environment yet, given how we responded to earnings, given how the market's been sensitive. Hey, if it's a good data release that implies stronger growth, bonds are still getting really itchy about it. We're very jumpy, trigger happy. So that's why this window that we're in, I know the market's saying vol is high tomorrow, and then you get a little bump around FOMC next week. Otherwise, who cares? It's not really a significant week. I think this is the most pivotal week of the year. Because if you can see the sentiment flip back with these big tech companies, where all of a sudden losers are no longer being punished and winners are starting to be rewarded, and we can get through FOMC and the market hasn't cleared last week's lows, I think you're in great shape. So yeah. It's survival right now. Survival is the name of the game for the bulls here. Today's not great, but it's still very much a no man's land for both directional type of traders.
Yeah, and I think you hit it right there. There's no clear direction to the upside or the downside. And I say that specifically for the bears, because I think after a down week like last week and the week before, it's easy to get kind of, you know, convinced into thinking, okay, we're going to have a reversal or we're going to have a continued pullback or whatever. We're, you know, all this bad data is going to come hit us smack dab in the middle of our faces. And, you know, we're going to have flash crash, whatever. I mean, doesn't, you know, you pick your analyst or whoever's saying. But honestly, I think that one of the biggest things today that I think should be very skeptical for the bears is Tesla earnings. There is no, like, even from a fundamental case that the bears make, which I'm not really convinced of it, but the case, from what I understand, goes something like, okay, well, if there's going to be inflation or a risk thereof, or I mean, whatever, what else is there beside inflation? I mean, you can jump in, you know, after the fact, but if that's the case, then you do not want to buy a company that is expected to be depleting its cash reserves, like Tesla, right. or that's not generating any income at all. That's like the most inflation sensitive stuff. It should be among, at least.
Doesn't have a moat, as people say.
Exactly. You know, inflation. You want to have, you know, at least assets that can grow or generate cash flow beyond how much inflation is.
To preserve purchasing power. If inflation is 5%, you got to have your assets generate at least 5% so that you don't lose purchasing power.
Right. And in that environment, risk assets tend to be sold off. But Tesla is both a risk asset and an asset that's not generating any cash or negative cash in this case. So how could it possibly be going up, especially given that that's one of the most traded stocks in the market, if all of those inflation concerns that the bears have is true? I think that is a huge red flag for the bears. Now, I'm not saying that that means we're shifting tomorrow or this afternoon and we're going to rally back to 50, 5150. But I think that if it happened, I don't think there would be any surprises. We have a late day rally. That would be very welcome in my sight. And I think that there would be no surprises if that happened, because this is not a market that is fundamentally bullish or bearish at this point. And I think any side can take the reins at any point. And if you're bearish, that is a double, that is a when you have a market like this, it is a higher risk for the bears than the bulls. Because if you have a snap back to the upside, I think it'll be very, very, very significant, very, very quick, and everybody caught short, it's gonna be it's just a very tough trade. It's like going long and short, it seems like a binary decision, but going short is significantly riskier, no matter when you're doing it, than going long, because there's an inherent floor to the market,
Oh yeah,
and
max loss. Right,
right.
max profit. So you can only go to zero
You can only go to zero
unless it's
and
April 2020. But right, like oil goes negative. But like, yeah,
oh yeah,
that's
yeah.
there's a max. There's if I short a stock at 10, what's the most I can make? 10. What's the most I can lose? Infinite, because a share could go to 1,000 or 10,000 or 1,000,000.
Right. Yeah. And you just have to be careful. When you're short, it's always riskier than being long. So in this case, it's like, I don't know, it's tough to find a short case for me.
Anton, I want to point something out here today. I've been tinkering with the moving average cloud here, just up the Fibonacci scale from 5 to 34, 5 being the 1 week moving average. We closed below it here on April 12th, and we don't move back above it on a closing basis until yesterday. Intraday today, we hit a low of 5,082. The 5 EMA, the 1 week moving average right now, is 5,082 and a half. So this is an interesting change in behavior where you can just see how I've bolded the line here. Every time that we kind of touch it after April 12th, that marks the high point for the day. Granted, it's only a few trading days, but intraday, we're just riding the rails of that 1 week moving average lower. Today, we're finding it as support after having broken above it yesterday. This is one of those little nuggets where if you're a bull, that's something that's a little bit of an encouraging sign that yes, while we sold off, we found the short-term trend support. And that's exactly where the rally started to pick back up again. So 5,098 right now in the S&P 500. We gapped open higher. We're trading a little bit lower. Yesterday's close was 5,106 and a half. So, 10th of a percent or so. It's not really a huge day to the downside. Holding here and really this week, again, why I talk about survival, bottoming, topping, that takes time. How long did it take for the top to form the S&P or the NASDAQ? NASDAQ was what? End of February through the first week and a half of March or April, excuse me. It took 7 weeks. If this is a true the low, not just a swing low, but this is the low, we want to hold here. We want to make it through this week where we can just stay around where we are. You don't need to make significant progress. You just want to deprive bears of the oxygen and that confidence that they have that they just got your 10% correction. We just wiped out the year-to-date gains and they couldn't do anything more with it. And then all of a sudden it looks like, oh, we just got through all these earnings and the May FOMC meeting and the Iranian-Israel conflict, and like all I got was this lousy t-shirt. That couldn't push us over. What's really going to do it? We got rid of all the Fed cuts this year. What's going to do it? And you start to feel dejected. And you say, you know what? Maybe I take some profit, see if this thing, it can't go lower right now. Maybe if I can see if I can reestablish at a higher point. So psychologically, again, very important right now in ES and NASDAQ, a very similar type of setup. These two have not had the kind of rebound that the Dow or the Russell have had. You see here today that where do we find support? Again, right along that 1 week moving average, this highlighted robin blue, sky blue, I don't know what color that is, line here in the chart. We were riding the rails lower last week. We poked above it today. We find support on it today. The low is 17,567 and a quarter. the 5 EMA is 17,577. So, I mean, literally within a 1 point in the NASDAQ, which is nothing, as you know, Anton. It hits that point and then it bounces. Seeds, green shoots, small bits of technical hope begin to emerge, showing that this is a rebound that may actually have some pace to it. A nice little Morningstar candlestick pattern there. Not quite, but close enough in NQ. Anton, when I think of you, I think of the Russell, though. So you're not really a NASDAQ guy. That's more of a Jamal thing. Like when I talk with Jamal, it's the Qs. With you, it's RTY. What are you seeing here today? Is this still an environment where you'd feel comfortable selling puts? It's a big reversal off of last week's low. And vol is still high, 61.7 IVR.
Yeah, I mean, the Russell, again, there's something about the Russell that's unique compared to the rest of the equity indexes. The Russell tends to be kind of like cross between NASDAQ and bonds, which is a weird thing to say, but I think technically it plays out almost every single day. And in this case, what I mean by that is there are multiple days where the Russell, whatever happens at the open, it tends to stay there. Regardless what the rest of the market does. So, and you saw this a few times in the last few weeks, especially the, you know, the market sold off, Russell sold off as well, or rallied, and worked both ways. And then the market, like the S&P, the NASDAQ reversed later in the day, but the Russell stood steady. That is a characteristic that bonds have, actually, where bonds usually make their big move at the in close to the open, and then they tend to stick close to where they opened for the rest of the trading day, which is why trading bonds intraday isn't really a common trading strategy, because their bonds don't move much intraday. You know, so and interestingly, the Russell has had a lot of those days. Today, and especially on a day where, you know, the Russell opened lower, I'm sorry, it didn't open lower, did it? It opened higher. It opened higher this morning. On a day it opened higher,
We're actually trading at the same level that we were at 9:32 a.m. for what it's worth. Like we opened higher, lower, then we jumped up to a new high.
Oh, 9:32. So, yeah.
Like, so we're like, but you say like we've gone nowhere at the start of the day. We are literally right around the same place where we were in the first 5 minutes of the cash equity open in New York.
Right. But the key is that there was a lot of two-sided action this morning. 9:32, we're at the same level, but you know, 9:40, we were 16 points higher. And now we're 16. And then we basically sold off to hit a low of, let's see, 1994. And now we're trading at 2002, which is basically 6 points higher. Point is, we're seeing a lot more two-sided action, the Russell intraday, and seeing these midday rallies is actually, in my opinion at least, is very bullish for the Russell, because we don't usually see we haven't really seen the Russell move much after it opened, especially if it was a down day. But we are seeing a lot of two-sided action today. For me personally, it's hard for me to short that. It's very difficult, especially the Russell being the index that you can have a 30, 40, 50 point day, 60 point day sometimes. And you know, and that's basically exclusive to the Russell. You don't have 3% up days in any other index. You know, yesterday was a good example. I think yesterday we were up at one point, I think over 40 points.
Over 2% at one point, yeah.
Over 2%, and that's a lot more common for the Russell than the rest of the equity market. So to be short the Russell, especially when you have the rest of the equity market coming off of a low, and the Russell is no longer being sticky at the open, which means that if the rest of the equity market rallies, you could see the Russell pop 2-3% in a day. And if you're short, there's nothing you can do about that. You are just and here's the interesting thing. Over time, I want to elaborate a little bit why it's so much more risky to be short. Over long periods of time, equity markets go up. And as a trader, even though we don't trade and hold positions for, you know, years, it's still very critical that we know that upward drift exists. Because what happens when we go short and we're wrong, we get double whammy. Because we essentially miss an up move that is eventually going to happen anyway. There is a statistical word for this, but it's basically saying, okay, if you know at some point the S&P is going to go to 6,000, well, then you know there's 1,000 points of an up move at some point in time. If you're short and you get caught in a 100-point rally in the S&P, then you're basically, you basically lost 100 points, but then you weren't able to make 100 points on the way up. But that has to be factored in because you're trading in a market environment that does inherently have an upward trend. So if you lose on the upward trend, you basically screwed yourself twice. It's hard to explain. I'll get the statistical. There is a word for it, but my point is, in terms of risk, it's a lot harder to. So and the interesting way to think about it is on the reverse, right? If you were long, and the market sold off 100 points, it's not as bad because you can eventually roll the position until the market comes back because it's statistically speaking, it's going to. But if you're short and the market goes up 100 points, there's nothing you can do. You can't bet and roll the short position until the market comes back to where it was. That's a better way to explain it. And because of that, you are basically you basically have to eat your loss as soon as you have it when you're short. But whereas if you're long and you have a sell-off or some kind of reversal, there are things you could do to wait out the loss or even have another opportunity to buy a dip and make it all back and then some on the up move, because that's inherently what equity markets do. So anyway, that's just my two cents on it. I'll hand it back off to you now.
No, it makes a good deal of sense to me, Anton. Reading the tea leaves here, we talk about using technical indicators to examine their characteristics. One of the things that drives me crazy about dyed-in-the-wool technicians and like, well, you know, RSI is doing this or that or the other thing. It's like, well, is this a range-bound market or, who cares if RSI is overbought or oversold? Tell me what happens historically when it gets overbought or oversold. Tell me what happens when it's in environments like this. What's been the defining characteristic of that indicator during the recent trend? So for this moving average envelope, is a 21 EMA on a 4-hour time frame or a 6-hour time frame, any sort of important length of time? Not whatsoever. So don't get wrapped up around why I have that on this chart. The point here is that we're using the same EMA cloud that we do on every single time frame, 5-13, 5-8, 13, 21, 34. On the way down, after the CPI reading on April 10th, that EMA cloud was pretty clear resistance. I'm on the 6-hour time frame here in ES, pretty clear resistance the entire time. Every time we rallied up into it, we really just couldn't even crack through. And during the way down, you could see that we were more responsive to the shorter term moving averages in the cloud than the longer term ones. I will point out here that for the first time that we've seen since April 10th, we actually have closes on the 6-hour time frame on the other side of that cloud. And this 6-hour candle is giving us a very long lower wick. Right? Buyers are stepping back in over the course of this 6-hour window and pushing prices higher. It's almost as if the cloud, which was resistance over the past 2 weeks, is starting to flip over and become support. So early still, right? We are off the lows of 49.64 in ES. We're trading at 51.04. We're still over 200 points removed from the high. We haven't broken the downtrend from the monthly highs yet here in ES, although that has happened in the Russell and it has happened in the Dow Jones, not the Russell. So you're starting to see some of the puzzle pieces come back together. But I say bull trap because I really want to see 51.67 cleared out. I really want to see the neckline of this head and shoulders pattern. Maybe it's a little bit lower even where you could feel more confident. The last swing low that you have before we finally really sell off, and that's closer to 51.50. Either way though, Anton, if you're bullish, some nice things to look at, you start to feel really confident once you get back through that 5150, 5167 area right now. And so if we're there, then all of a sudden we could say, okay, false breakout to the downside. Well, that means the head and shoulders pattern needs to be nullified, which means a return to the head, which gives you a 5333 and a half target. And then, Anton, if we're at 5160 and we think that we have a 5333 and a half target, we can get creative for how we express that point of view. Maybe that means a long at the money call. Maybe that means a short put spread with just a simple long call that's out of the money, kicker, right? Try to juice it up a little bit more. We have to think about that, but technically still wait for this market to come to you. Don't get overexcited about the rebound one day at a time right now. Survival mode this next week is the name of the game for bulls. And if we get more than that, then we're really cooking with fire.
Yeah, I agree. And I think especially when you look at something like this very slow grind higher without any resistance really, and what I mean by that is We essentially in the last, let me see this, pull up a minute chart here. Essentially since 12:45 Eastern, we have essentially stair stepped higher very, very slowly without any resistance to the downside. Whenever there is some
25 very, points. Easy 25 points.
Yeah, easy 25 points. And you know, and this is the one inherent thing about bullish sentiment and bull market inherently. Is you will just get these very quiet stair step moves to the upside that just total like 25 or 30 points in the blink of an eye. You don't even really realize it until it happens without any resistance to the downside, right? When you have a bearish market like 2022, what you will see is attempts to reverse higher. You'll maybe have 5 points, 10 points of reversal, and then 15 or 20 points of sell-off. And that'll just continue throughout the day. Or you'll have essentially a stair step lower day where you're, you know, 45 minutes later, you're down 30 points. But you're not seeing that, and you're seeing it to the upside. So again, this is very, it's a very precarious case. You know, if you're bearish, I would highly, highly suggest just, you know, just taking a look at the positions and readjusting, at least being very small, you know, maybe a short call spread if you want to be bearish, having that defined risk very, very tight, a very tight stop loss. Because once this reverses and there's a clear bullish signal to the upside where everybody's bullish now, there is going to be a lot of money to be made to the upside. And you don't want to be holding a short position that's just losing and then there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, Anton, before we go over to bonds here, because we had a five-year auction that wasn't great, but it isn't really showing any sort of negative impulse to the market. I mean, look at what we've done since 1 p.m. Did a 1 p.m. bond auction scare anyone here today? Or note auction, rather? Not really. Yeah. Can't say that to be the case. I shared the stats from this Dow Award winner, Wayne Whaley, the other day about what happens. I told you on Monday, I was going through over the weekend what happens when you have 5 months in a row that are green, followed by a 6 month that is red. This has happened 30 times previously for the S&P 500 since 1950.
Yeah.
1 month forward return, 22 times up, 8 times down, 1.88% gain. 3 month forward return, 25 times up, 5 times down, 3.86% average gain. 6 month return, 27 times up, 3 times down, 8.95% higher on average. A year later, 24 times up, 6 times down, 10.24% gain. So yes, it was a step back in the month of April, and it certainly bucked what had been the historical tendency of a market to rally after two consecutive quarters of 10% gains. When you have November, December, January, February, March, all green. April typically is green as well. April is the second best month of the year for stocks over the past 20 years prior to coming into this month. All those things were a letdown. But that still doesn't mean that the game's over. Not for the bulls. And when you look at the stats, even as you have some of these setbacks in what has been a very strong bull market, the odds are if this time isn't different, if this is a roll of the dice, will it be the typical outcome? You have to favor the markets going up still. And so that's why, even though there was a nice pullback here, bears, if you had your chips on Friday night, Anton, I was talking to you Friday night around midnight, right? I'm like, oh, got to cover, got to get long, right? Got to reverse this, get out of your bond position. It's going to fade. Right? If you had the opportunity at the end of last week to get out, the window may be closing. And so it was a nice pullback. This is a dead man zone. This is not a place where I would initiate long or short, quite frankly, if I wasn't already in, because it can go either way right now. You get above 51.67, you got something to play with as a bull. You're feeling a lot better. If you don't, bears are going to be looking back to last week's low real quick. 49.64 is going to look juicy. And if you break 49.64, Anton, then technically speaking, you have a market that looks like it can go a lot lower. 47s. Easily before you find any sort of a bottom. And that's a very different outcome than talking about a market with a return profile of 70 to 90% of the time trading higher over the next 1 to 12 months, given what we've seen.
Interesting.
So patience, just patience right now.
I know, but it's itching, Chris. It's itching. Look at this. The S&P's up on the day. Russell's not even down 10 points. Tesla's back up 11%. I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe return to some of those long call spreads, perhaps? Or are you going to
return?
Wait?
We're still in them.
Well, I don't know. You told me in the span of 24 hours,
Yeah, that's what traders do, Anton. We get in and out of positions. That's what we do.
But not
the market was panicking on Friday night because of rockets being fired on the Ayatollah's birthday. Like, that's a clear, the market was panicking. That's something that changes. It's an exhaustion.
What are you subscribed to? What news is, I know you were watching Iranian television, but besides that, as you're, you know, where
Twitter,
where...
everything is on Twitter. As much of a cesspool as the website's become, if you know where to find, if you have, this is what was great about having the old verification system, aside from the fact that I was verified, was when you were following a reporter, you knew it was that reporter. It was so much easier to get verified news. Now, granted, information comes out quicker, but the veracity of it, you know, do you trust, you see this all the time now, especially with what's happening between Ukraine and Russia and Gaza and Israel. You're seeing, oh, this bomb goes off. Well, no, that was a bomb that went off 4 years ago in a different part of the world and people are repurposing it. So it's difficult to figure out what's real or what's not. But if you have the right sources, then you can get information a lot quicker than what's being reported through traditional Western media channels. And I don't think that hurts.
All right.
It goes back to the old movie. What happened in Wall Street with Gordon Gekko, right? Like, information's king. If you get the information first, you're the first mover. And first mover advantage is huge.
Yeah. I don't know who you follow on Twitter, but you know what? If it works,
you can see my follow list. Go check it out. I do have a war feed though, specifically a list that of like war reporters in Eastern Europe and the Middle East that I find very useful. You just can translate their tweets directly on Twitter. So I don't need to follow them, even if they don't speak English, you can still follow them. Anton, let's talk about this bond auction here. Not good.
Not good.
Tailed by about 4 basis points. Investors, they want more compensation. This was the largest 5-year auction ever, by the way. Bid to cover ratio was 2.39, which was lower than the past auction. And I think we're seeing a pretty clear trend here in some of these auction results recently. Short end debt, not a problem. You kind of know where the short end of the yield curve is going. The Fed might cut, they might not. If they hike again, do we really think we're going to like 6% or 7%? Maybe 5 to 5.75 or maybe 6, right? But do you really think we're going to 7%, 8%? So demand for twos is fairly stable. When you're going out along the curve, though, over the past few weeks, you're seeing that the weakness in the auction results is piling up. Much higher yields, much bigger tails, lower bid-to-cover ratios, lower indirect and direct bidders. Anton, over the course of this session, the bond bounce really hasn't done much of anything. I want to go to ZF first just because it's where the fives are, obviously, for the auction. I'm going to go out to 1 year. There we are. Okay. Friday night, we get that rally up. We sell off. We haven't done much of anything Thursday night into Friday morning, we rally up. We sell off. We haven't done much of anything the past few days. Vol is coming back in here, though. Are you still of that proposition that you want to be long bonds? Do you find this price action compelling? Do you find the environment that we're in from a volatility perspective appealing? What's the play here? Because I see nothing good.
Oh, here we are, the thorn in my yearly positions. Well, you know, I think despite, put this correctly, over the last few months, I was, you know, vocal about kind of extending duration, kind of taking some risk off the table from the long position, but still remaining long. I think that I still retain that, but I think on a much smaller size and a longer duration. Again, extending duration does reduce risk on a daily time frame. If you're buying premium, let's say, which again, ZB, despite an IV rank of 24, which is like, you know, low moderate, is still some of the lowest implied volatility on the board, which is kind of crazy to say. Just a couple weeks ago, you know, 24 would have been rich. Now 24 is basically bottom of the barrel. And in terms of premium, I can't help but notice that premium is still very cheap in bonds.
Mm-hmm.
Very cheap in bonds. And, you know, despite the fact that we're not seeing a directional move to the upside, I just think that if you have a long enough horizon, maybe now it's not 60 days, maybe you go out to 90 days.
Interesting.
Okay? But you go out to 90 days or even closer to the end of the year, It's just, it's very difficult for me to say, you know what, I'm going to be out of this trade completely, because look at this implied volatility of 13.7%, and this is closer to the election when things are expected to get more volatile anyway. If you go to the November options, or if they have November options, what's the latest you can go out to?
November 22nd,
Okay.
right after the election.
This is, I guess the IV reading is not coming through, but let's go to the one right before, I think October. August. Okay. Well, okay, fine. If it's 13.7 there, and then you have an extra August, September, October, November, 3 months, it looks about the same. I mean, from a, let's see, five, you get a 5.5 points at, was that 8.5? Yeah, 8.7. I mean,
I mean, look, that 13.5 IB index for May 24th, you go out 3 months to August 23rd, it's now 5.58, 3 point step up, another 3 point step up to November. Probably an IV index or IV, that's 13.5 to 14. Like just
maybe 15 is
ballparking it.
most.
Yeah,
It only
ballparking it.
15 most, but even at 15, equity
Still
markets
low.
are priced higher. So it seems too cheap to not nibble. And listen, those options by raw dollar figures do seem expensive, of course, because they're further out. But on a daily basis, your theta is the lowest that it is compared to any other option that you buy, which means that you won't be paying to hold this position much. And the thing is any move to the upside will yield some profit. Even if nothing happens for the next 30 or 60 days, you have 1 month until November where bonds have a nice bounce. This position can easily go into the money. And to me, that's justifiable enough to put a small position on. Now, again, would I be looking to do as big of a size? Probably not. Would I be looking to, should I put it? Would I be looking to, manage it at, it's weird. Yeah, there are no bids over there. But would I be looking to manage it at the same level? Maybe I'd be more conservative in my management target. But again, if it's cheap enough, I don't see a reason why you have to bail on a trade, especially in a market that does indeed have more of a natural floor than stocks do. To me, that's where I stand. I mean, I don't really have a good answer besides just going to the volatility and saying it's cheap and saying if you give yourself enough time, eventually this can turn around. But that's sometimes how trading is. You make your best judgment. I can't convince myself to be short, and I can't convince myself to stay out of them because at the end of the day, by the election time, bonds will have to move, I think. And if that's your take, premium's cheap enough to justify it. So justify putting a position on. So that's where I stand. But again, not as bullish as I was and not as active of a position that I had. That I will give you. But in terms of getting out completely, I'm not there yet.
Anton, I've stayed away for a little while here. I have nothing good to say about bonds. And certainly I have something worse to say today when I look at ZB. Technically speaking, whatever's going on here on the 4 hour chart since the start of April, it's been a pretty clear downtrend. It looked like maybe we're starting to round out a bit of a bottom here, symmetrical triangle perhaps coming into play. We just went back and hit our lowest level since April 17th. And you may say that's not really a lot, but the fact that the series over the past week in one day, going back to April 16th, the fact that the series of higher lows off the bottom has now been broken doesn't make me sit easy, Anton. I don't see it in ZN either, where it's not looking pretty good. Again, not quite the setback just yet, but when you look at the chart here, does it look like it wants to break? This is really rough. I know we're at support right now, but volatility is not high. And given my own disposition about how commodity prices are moving and what the Fed should be doing, I just don't see it right now. There'll be a point in time where I want to be a bond bull again. And that was certainly one of my long expectations for this year. Long bonds and long yen. How did that work out? Not good so far. Eventually I'll get there with you, Anton. Just right now, the technicals, the momentum.
These S&Ps up 9 points.
That's fine. That's okay. We're okay with that. That's
I'm telling
fine.
you, Chris. I'm telling you.
This is a measure twice, cut once situation, right? This wasn't like it was in October, early November, where I was like a rabid animal. This is, I, my long disposition feels very different here. So we can get the confidence back. We can go back to how confident we were on April 1st.
The Dow rallied 200 points in the last hour. The Dow doesn't do that, Chris.
Is that allowed to happen? Is that okay by you?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Metals dinged here today. Anton, we've been watching. We've been waiting. We've been hoping. Silver finally gave us a reason to get back in long. I did it yesterday. I wasn't going to chase. I was waiting for it to come back to the 1 month moving average. And indeed it did. And it gave us that hammer candle. So I'm long silver here. There's a multi-year breakout that very well may just be getting started. The longer term charts, as I've shown many times over many weeks, but we'll do it again, assuming that people aren't listening every single day. What's to dislike about what's going on in silver long term? You look at a 20-year chart, you go back to the highs you have in 2011, April 2011, February 2021. We just broke out of that. Left shoulder, head, right shoulder, neckline up near 30, which we just got rejected from. So opportunities to get in on the long precious metals trade is certainly my cup of tea. We had seen vol come back in considerably at a point yesterday. IVR was below 50, whereas just a few days ago, Anton, we were looking at IVRs north of 100. So back to the 1 month moving average, like where we were at the end of March. I missed the opportunity to get back in long then, not making the same mistake twice. Can't fool me more than once, Mr. Kulikov. How are you feeling about precious metals here now that we've seen a setback and a little bit of basing?
I don't know, Chris. I don't know if, you know what, I don't know if I can agree with you there. I think that precious metals may have seen their top for a little bit. I mean, if we don't have follow through to the upside in the next couple of days, well, let me say this. If we don't have follow through or consolidation, in other words, it stays around this level. If we don't have that or a follow through to the upside, and we just have kind of this like slow move to the downside, I think it's over for a little bit. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to be, I mean, I know I said this on Monday, that I was kind of agreeing with you here. I'd be looking to a place to get long. And I think still that's not necessarily changed all that much. You know, if there's a small enough position, maybe like a long call spread that, you know, you put on and you're like, okay, with a little bit of a bounce, I'll get out, maybe make my profit target very, very small. And, you know, if we go down, then, you know, it's a call spread, define my risk, fine, whatever. But we haven't really seen any move to the upside that's sustained. And I know it's only been a couple days, but I mean, gold doesn't really, I mean, I don't know, from when I've traded gold, and again, it hasn't been a lot, I'm not a professional gold trader, but on the way up, gold never really had many days where it just hung around before making another move higher. I mean, maybe middle of March, but that's it. And I think that if you're going to be long gold, you need that follow through. Otherwise, you may just fizzle out. And especially the volatility high, this is a trade. It's essentially the opposite of equities, right? So in equities, right, if you have a move to the downside and you don't have a continuation, chances are, not all the time, but chances are you're going to have a move higher and volatility will come down. Gold's the same way. Volatility goes higher when it goes up. So if you don't have follow through to the upside and volatility goes down, you're gonna have gold sell off. And I think that is a huge risk for anybody wanting to be gold right, be long gold right now. You have to see a very quick follow through. And if not, I would bail on the trade.
Fair enough point, my friend. Gold, just like silver, finding support at its 1 month moving average. While there has been a little bit more damage technically, maybe we've exhausted the geopolitical event risk. Difficult to say that we've really come off the board here, that Iranian general is killed on April 3rd in Damascus. We opened that day at $2,301. So while we have pulled back and maybe some of the geopolitical event risk since then has been taken out of this market, where did we hit a low yesterday? $2,304.06 an ounce. The high for April 3rd was $2,321.80. So I see the washout of the geopolitical event risk from the Israel-Iran tensions. That was washed out yesterday. We're now back to where we were effectively in this market prior to it. And what was gold doing prior to the flare-up of the tensions? It was already rallying. It was already making a multi-year breakout from what was a, let's go to the monthly chart here. It's already making a multi-month breakout, multi-year breakout relative to the highs back in 2020. So as far as I'm concerned, can this be a near-term top? Yes. Would I still want to have some long gold exposure over time over a long period of time, like you say, 60 days, 90 days, I have no idea what's going to happen over the next week. This thing could come back in 3%. But given the longer term technicals, I think the long exposure and will be willing to ride it out, patience is worthwhile. So I'll take my first stab at that long side again at the 1 month moving average, where we've previously found support in silver ever since we started breaking out over the past 2 months. Anton, we're running out of time here because it is Wednesday, which means it's truth or skepticism day here on Tasty Live. We're going to hop on over to what's happening in oil real quick, because we need to talk about the Weimarization of the Japanese yen, which is hitting a fresh yearly low here today. Oil prices traded up. They're now trading back down, $82.53 a barrel. We're continuing to hover right along that descending trend line from the June 22, September 23 swing highs. We haven't really made that definitive break yet, like that we saw in gold prices. We've erased all of the gains that were in place going back to April 3rd, when the Iran-Israel conflict really starts to heat up. So maybe now we go back to doing what we were doing beforehand, which was rallying for what it's worth. I don't see a really sexy trade here right now, Anton. 22.5 IVR. Do I really want to sell this call spreads against the highs of all this low? Do I want to buy out of the money puts? We're not really breaking back under the triangle just yet. So again, I'd feel a lot more comfortable on the bullish side if we're above 84, and a lot more comfortable on the bearish side if we're below 80. And at 82.5, not interested. Give me more.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's kind of a dead trade for me right now.
Yeah, and you could say, well, if you're bearish at 80, why not get in here? Because I could flip a coin and tell you if it's going to get above 84 or below 80 right now. I have, again, no conviction, no confidence. When you look at the charts, the technicals are muddled. You know, it's above the 34 and sitting at the 5, but below the 21. There's no clear momentum sign right now. So just, again, patience, wait. Although if you're short the call spreads, like I know Radigan is right now, the lack of follow through that we've seen to the downside, even the cooling of the geopolitical tensions, again, makes you think maybe the floor is higher here, like it's higher in gold. We're not seeing all that give back just yet. Anton, I talked about the Weimarization of the Japanese yen. I just saw that Zero Hedge tweet pop through my screen as well. I will say that this is a good day for the dollar. The yen is down by 0.38% right now, as we see here in 6J. We're going to pop on over like this. Okay. Weakest the Japanese yen has been since 1990, over 30 years. I've been staying away from this, even though the IVR is juicy, because quite frankly, I don't know why the BOJ or Ministry of Finance would intervene at this juncture. They like to do so when they have tailwinds at their back, like when yields are coming down or when oil prices are moving lower. There's a reason why they started talking about potential shifts in policy back in December, because in early December, what was happening? Oil prices were coming back in, US Treasury yields were coming off the board. So they had that tailwind. When they talked, the market was already receptive to it right now. You know, it's kind of like, Anton, if you ask me what I want for dinner tonight, and you ask me at 7 o'clock at night, chances are I may have already eaten. But if you ask me at 4 in the afternoon, I may be very excited to have dinner with you because I'll be hungry then. So the timing aspect of this, like when to make the ask, is right. And this is not the right time for the market right now. So if I think about a long yen position or even trying to fade this with an 84.4 IVR, I don't know where you find your strikes. You're really in uncharted territory here. Most traders that are in the market right now were not trading in 1990. The average lifespan of a trader at a bank is about 7 years. So this is a tough spot to just arbitrarily say this is going to be it. I know the temptation's there. It's there for me too. I think we need to wait and find something technically where we see a little bit of a bottom maybe forming, some rounding out, and then we could take a shot. See oil prices get below 80. See US yields stop moving up, and then we could take a shot. But right now, this thing is a falling knife. I guess the only blessing here for my month of April is it's not the yen that's causing me all the pain. I finally learned to stand out of the way until we find any sort of hope.
Yeah, the Japanese yen looks a lot like natural gas to me, which is not
a good thing.
It basically looks like just a falling knife that has literally, it's essentially a coin flip, even though there is a strong downtrend, which is like the worst type of trade you can put yourself in. You know, at least with crude oil, if it's a coin flip, you have essentially like, you know, a pretty good idea of what your risk is. With this, like, I guess you can find a defined risk trade and just continue to nibble on the way down, and at some point you're going to be right. Hope. But if that's, you know, If that's not the Susman play, that's not the strategy. That's you know, but I don't know. Yeah, it's been a tough thing. The only thing I will say about Japanese yen is that its IV rank is very high. So if you want to consider putting like a put spread below the current price right now, or maybe like a strangle, a wide strangle, that may be an interesting play, just because you know, there you at least have the potential for volatility to come down, and then you'll get some, you know, profit in that way. But directionally, it's near impossible to find a trade there for me, at least.
And Tom, before we wrap this up, because we do have to go, I want to point out one thing here that I want to kick around with Ilya in overtime later. So be sure to tune in. Canadian dollar here took a little bit of a step back today, but it's finding a nice little tail. IVR is only 40.1, so it's not through the roof. While the Canadian dollar has weakened here, we've also seen that the US-Canada yield spreads have moved in a more favorable direction for the Canadian dollar. So the fact that we've seen this move off the lows and yields are moving the way they are, there could be a little bit of a floor right around 72 and a quarter, 0.7225. We saw that swing low last week. We saw that low actually at the end of October, beginning of November. And so I myself am looking at a put spread down there to see if that floor holds. Not the highest IVR on the board, but I feel better about selling a put spread in the Canadian dollar than I do in the Japanese yen right now. That's for sure. What's next on this calendar? Tomorrow, busy day, big thing, GDP, 8:30 a.m. Eastern and 7:30 a.m. Central Time. There's pending home sales later on in the morning, and then that seven-year note auction. Look at the fives and the tens, and of course, we'll be covering that with Jamal on Futures Power Hour tomorrow. As we do at the end of every one of these shows, we do a brief bit of education. Go to tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures, where you can find this great coursework put together by the fine folks on the Tasty Live research team. Anton, when we click in, we're going to go over to market products today. Due to its diversified nature, many companies representing many different industries, the S&P 500 is one of the most widely traded futures contracts. The interest rate sector is actually comprised of five different bond products, ZT, ZF, ZN, ZB, and UB, for twos, fives, tens, 30s, and ultras. You go to currencies, there are now six products available because we have the Mexican peso futures as well. For energies and metals, there are four products to choose from, CL, NG, HO, and RB. But you can learn more about all the different products available when you're trading futures here on Tasty with the Tasty Trade platform that we talk about here on Tasty Live Futures Power Hour. Go to tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures, or simply click the link here seen on the bottom of the screen. It will take you there directly. Anton, this slide's old. Six products now. I haven't updated this since the Mexican peso futures came online, so that's exciting, I think. Maybe it's not. We'll end the show there, though. For Anton Kulikov, I've been Chris Vecchio. This has been Futures Power Hour. See everyone tomorrow. Up next, after a brief break, it's Wednesday. You know what that means. Truth of Skepticism, Sosnoff, Radigan. Stay tuned.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered